Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas here. It's Naturally Green on WISL 1040, 92.1 FM. And yesterday's snow was shocking. But really, we do get April snow. And I think I heard the average last measurable snowfall is usually April 14th. Again, on average. So there'll probably be certainly could be a little bit more. But we got cold enough last night to leave a layer of ice on our little pond in our backyard here in the city of Rochester. And that made me feel better about bringing in my sort of mother plant annuals that I'd overwintered. I had brought them outside a couple weeks ago thinking, realistically, I probably would have to bring them back in, but kind of hoping, I put them in our garage a couple nights when it got down to 33 and left a couple of them out, and they took a little bit of a hit, but didn't die, but it got even colder last night, and so luckily I had brought them inside, this week, Tuesday, Wednesday night, 30 degrees, actually Tuesday night, Wednesday night, and Thursday night. So I'm not going to be bringing them back outside for another week maybe. But then hopefully I can leave them outside. They've been up in my studio in the sky here in my office in the attic, which has a south-facing window. And so they've been growing nicely all winter. Begonias, geraniums, lemongrass, a variety of different Plectranthus plants, and a couple other things that just happened to survive along with the others. Several kinds of begonias, all blooming beautifully. And when you bring them outside, they face wind and sun and somewhat colder weather, and it can really kind of burn them, and sometimes you lose a lot of the leaves that are on them because they're used to months of being inside with really no wind not the intensity of the sun that you have outside. So, but I had to bring them in for a week, and I often don't bring them outside till May, so I was way ahead. I knew I might be in trouble. But luckily, haven't lost anything, and just had to schlep them in and out. And they're in big pots, so it's not the easiest of tasks. I try to limit it. Invariably, in the fall, I might bring them inside for a couple nights, and then put them back outside for those early frosts or close to frosts. So I play this game in the spring and also in the fall. But it gives me some big mother plants, and I can make 100 divisions off a couple of these Plectranthus. They are the one with a purple underside to the leaf and kind of a purple stem, really dark green glossy leaves, purple flowers, really fantastic Plectranthus. I've got lots of starts. I'll probably put them in some window boxes. Gives me a nice long propagation container, and then I can move that around and bring it inside if I need to. Also, as we get into later April, early May. If you have comments, questions on your garden, you can email me, michael@saverlife.com. You can reach us here by phone, 585-346-3000. Last week, one of our listeners called a little later during the food show to ask about crabgrass. And so I thought I'd mention a couple things about crabgrass. If you are in search of crabgrass preventer, the pre-emergent, you do have to put that down early, much earlier than most people probably do. And the idea is that the seeds that are waiting there won't germinate with this herbicide, that's used as a pre-emergent. And those emerge earlier in the season, again, than most people think. So I would avoid using it for a couple of reasons. One, you can't put down regular grass seed if you use a pre-emergent because it keeps the regular grass seed from germinating too. So it kind of boxes you into having a lawn that isn't thick enough. And other weeds are going to grow at some point. And the pre-emergent isn't good for the entire year, so some crabgrass will probably emerge at some point. So the whole problem, usually, with crabgrass is that your lawn wasn't thick enough, and you were maybe mowing too short. So if you, instead of using a crabgrass pre-emergent, if you fertilize your lawn and add some grass seed, right now would be a great time to add some grass seed. If there are areas that you normally get crabgrass, or if you can see the soil, that's a sign you probably could use a little bit of grass seed. It's not probably as much grass seed as you think. If you cover the ground with grass seed, it's going to be too much. It's going to be like having, you know, a small pot with 20 tomato plants in it. They're not going to prosper all packed into one pot. So you need to sprinkle the grass seed out. You don't need a layer of grass seed. And this is a great time for grass seed to germinate and grow and get a good root system and thicken your lawn. And then if you mow higher in general all year long, you're going to have fewer weeds because the taller grass shades the ground. And the difference between the middle setting on your mower and the high setting on your mower might be quite a few weeds. It doesn't take, I don't mean you have to have 6-inch grass out there to avoid having weeds. It's just a lot of people mow at the bottom setting of the mower, the middle setting of the mower, and I would go for the high setting. Unfortunately, most of the commercial mowing crews are mowing pretty short. And to get them to change their machines just for your property is a challenge. I've run into instances where, you know, they'll tell the homeowner that they raised their machines and they didn't. They'll tell them that they'll raise them next time and they'll forget to do that, and it'll just stay that, because it's to change the commercial mowers. You know, it's one more step, and I think they don't want to bother with it. And maybe some machines, it's difficult to do. I've never tried to change the setting on a commercial mower. But if you have your own mower, you can adjust those heights yourself and start out mowing as high as you can, which is not very high. It's still going to be maybe 2.5 inches, something like that. The low setting, though, it really lets a lot of sun in, and invariably you're going to get more weeds and need more weed killer. So mow high, that, and fertilize the lawn, add some grass seed, and hopefully you won't need the pre-emergent. A lot depends on how soon summer comes and sort of dries some things out, burns out the lawns. But your new grass seed should get established, and maybe in those areas where you've had problems with crabgrass before, you do a little bit of watering if we have an early season drought, and again, just try to give that grass, the good grass, a boost. So crabgrass is just a opportunist. It shows up when there's the regular grass is missing. And it's pretty effective at covering the ground. That's Mother Nature is effective in general at covering the ground with weeds. If we don't cover it with mulch or plants, the weeds will show up. So grass seed, fertilizer, mowing high, that is your best crabgrass preventer. And maybe we'll end up with a couple of crabgrass plants in the future. Perhaps none as you continue to improve your lawn. Another thing that would keep crabgrass from growing is clover. because that helps to cover the ground. It helps to produce nitrogen, a fertilizer, and it used to be part of grass seed mixtures until a few decades ago, three, 4 decades ago, when it became much cooler to have only grass in your lawn and none of that pesky clover. If you were cynical, you might say that you know, the people that produce herbicides, you know, helped to promote the idea that clover was a bad idea in your lawn, and maybe even the people that produce fertilizers, because you don't need as much fertilizer if you have clover in your lawn. You may not need any at all, and that's not good for business. So again, if you're cynical, you might think that the clover was banned, and the advertising convinced people that you didn't want to have clover in your lawn, which there probably is some truth to that. Probably also just a trend toward immaculate green lawns like we have on golf courses, where there's no weeds in sight. Clover also provides nectar for pollinators, so it has a bunch of benefits. And the areas in your lawn that develop clover, if you were to add some seed, those probably won't burn out in a drought. It's kind of amazing to see lawns with some areas of clover where people haven't killed it, where it's spreading, and those areas invariably are greener during a drought and recover better. So you can find white clover seed, not easily. It's not everywhere, and it doesn't seem to grow very quickly from seed. So it's more of a long-term proposition if you want to try to put some in your lawn. But it used to be part of grass seed mixtures, which made a lot of sense because it does produce fertilizer. It's a legume. So it's a good thing to have in lawns, and for low maintenance, low cost. Again, if you think about not having to buy the pre-emergent, not having to buy fertilizer for your lawn, the clover is kind of a good solution. And I love it. You know, I guess the one negative is that if you were to have bare feet and you were to step on a honeybee that was getting nectar from the white clover plant, the honeybee might get mad at you for stepping on it. But in general, the bees that go to white clover have no interest in you. You have to aggressively go after them if they're going to sting you. So it's really, I grew up on lawns that had clover in it. And I know, I think maybe once I got a kind of a bee stuck between my toes. I didn't realize I was walking along, so maybe I got stung once because of that. Again, wasn't watching where I was going. So white clover seed, I've seen it at Crossman Seeds. I've seen it at Clover Nursery. And there's probably other nurseries that carry it. It's not easy to find, perhaps. They sell little packets of it. It's little tiny seeds. So you might have to call around to find out where to get some. Many of the nurseries are doing curb service right now. Places like Sarah's Garden Center and Bristol's, to name a couple of them. And some may not be doing curbside service. I think, you know, for April, anyone that planted their tomato plants, they're now dead as of this morning. So hopefully people didn't do that, but I guarantee some people did. We tend to plant things too early. And so, for the month of April, I think nurseries, they'll lose some sales probably if people are not just wandering through picking up plants that they want to add to their gardens and putting them in. But I've got to go back today and see how this lupin is doing that one of my neighbors planted a couple streets away, a couple blocks away. I walk by this yard and there's this lupin that's in full bloom. Like, well, that just came out of a greenhouse because we're not going to see lupin blooming for a long time, really. And they had three or four of these plants, and they were pretty big plants. They were not inexpensive. And maybe they covered them last night. I hope they did, because they're probably dead if they didn't. You take plants that are tender anyway. They're not meant to grow this time of the year, and you take them out of a greenhouse and you put them out to 30-degree temperatures. They're going to suffer, if not just die. And then this week, when we got 3 nights in a row of 30 degrees, could be a little colder, that will seal their fate. And even if you cover them, that cover can blow off. They had them in several parts of their garden, so it was not going to be easy to cover them. You could put a 5-gallon bucket over them. That would probably be your best way to treat them at night. But they're going to have to do that for 3 or 4 more nights, probably. So, don't need to get things this early. Plant some seeds and do some dividing, do some cleanup in your garden, some pruning, some of those tasks, and you can get your plants in May. And perhaps by some point in May, everyone's wearing masks, testing is going on, we know more about this coronavirus, and we'll be able to buy those plants that we normally do in May. So we're not losing time here, but the nurseries are losing sales. I mean, they do sell things like these lupins early in the year, and unfortunately, they often die with the frosts in April. So beware. Our frost-free date, I think, is May 15th. So we usually have a frost late April, early May, and these lupins, I don't see how they're going to survive. But I'll let you know next week how they do through last night and then the 30-degree nights coming up. And it seems like when they predict 30 degrees, at least that's the airport, that's where they're predicting the 30 degrees will happen. And I live very close to the airport, but it still seems like it's usually a degree or two less than they are predicting. And then 28 degrees is going to be very tough on plants coming out of greenhouses. So if you see nurseries and other businesses where people are not wearing masks, encourage them to do that. And we have finally, the CDC has decided that masks are a good idea. They would have decided this earlier if masks were more widely available, and for hospitals and first responders, etc. They were worried about. So they gave us poor guidance in terms of wearing masks and said they weren't necessary. They didn't help. They gave us that guidance because they didn't want the masks to be hoarded and any more than they were already and not available for hospitals and first responders, nursing homes, etc. So they gave us wrong advice, for a good reason. A better solution would have been to actually produce these masks earlier, and have them available, which wasn't done. Even though other countries were using them and having success using them, we weren't producing them. And really, most of the masks that ordinary people are wearing are ones they made themselves, like we did. So I've got butterfly fabric on my mask. I'll be one of the few people walking around with butterflies on their masks, so you'll know who I am, even though I'm hidden partly behind this mask. But the CDC could have given that advice a couple of months ago, that wearing masks was probably a good idea. You should make your own. And we would have had much less transmission of this coronavirus if they'd done that. It's really pretty inexcusable, I think, to give that kind of incorrect advice. Again, I understand why they did it. I don't think that was the best solution. So wear masks. They do help significantly, and there are tons of patterns out there for making your own. You can use almost any fabric, and maybe judge the number of layers based on what kind of fabric it is. So you don't even need to sew a mask. There's tons of guidelines on just folding bandanas and using rubber bands or hair ties and creating a very easy mask within seconds. And again, that mask is not going to protect you actually as much as it probably will protect someone else. And most people say, well, I don't have coronavirus. Why do I need to wear a mask? Well, you don't know. Have you been tested? Do you know that you haven't had close contact with someone who might have it? You don't know because the testing isn't happening. So that you need to look at it in terms of protecting other people. And, a week ago, if you had a mask on, people probably thought you had the coronavirus, and that was the only reason you were wearing a mask. Today, people see masks everywhere, and hopefully those who aren't wearing them will decide they should as they see how many people are wearing them. So we're going to have to wear them for a while, and that's what's going to allow our economy to get back working again, is if people wear the masks. That's the key to this, to reduce the transmission rates, is people wearing masks. So okay, make your own now and make a couple of them maybe, and then be careful in how you use them, how you take them off. All of those things are really important to keep you safe and also to keep other people safe. So make a mask, and again, you can use almost any material. Old sweatshirt, T-shirt. I mean, everyone has an old T-shirt around. If you don't, then use a new T-shirt. But again, make a mask and use it to protect other people as much as maybe more than yourself. So again, your mask protects me. The mask I'm wearing protects you, and we need to be doing this for a while. I would guess probably 2 months, somewhere in that range of having to wear masks, and that's certainly better than the transmission and continuing the more extreme lockdown even longer. If you have comments, questions about masks or whatever, email me or michael@saverlife.com. You can reach us here, 585-346-3000. And a couple things. One, there was a really good interview with DNC's Brian Sharp and Dr. Michael Mendoza from Monroe County Health Department. It's about a half an hour interview. You can find it on the DNC website, and access is probably free. A lot of publications are making coronavirus coverage freely available, like the New York Times. But and I've watched Governor Cuomo a number of times over the last week or 10 days. I think that's been very helpful to see his perspective looking at all of New York State. But Brian Sharp's interview with Dr. Michael Mendoza was it was excellent. And again, talking about what's happening right here in our backyard, and the the limitations, I guess, that are out there. And it, when you look at the number of cases that are reported, as I've said for several weeks, those numbers are relatively useless because they're not testing very many people. And then it turns out from the interview with Dr. Michael Mendoza that there's about a 30% false negative rate on these tests. So that means that a bunch of these tests are being done and people think they're negative and they're actually positive. And they retest them and then it comes back positive later on. So these tests are not that great. They're not very available, and we're not using them on people. So he said that, you know, they'll test someone who has the symptoms, who's in the hospital, but they don't go back and test all the people that person lived with because they don't have the test. So they tell those people to stay home and quarantine themselves, and we have no idea how many of those people are out there, but it's plain that there are thousands probably here just in Monroe County. Again, they are not testing people who are likely to have it, but are able to stay home and are not ready to go in the hospital. So beware the numbers that are out there. And any kind of comfort that you get from the fact there's only 600 cases in Monroe County, well, those numbers are just wrong. By exponential, add zeros, at least one zero, probably, in my opinion. So listen to the interview. I think in this we need to have more information, and it's a really worthwhile 30 minutes to watch. And maybe watching some of this, listening to some of the other businesses that are out there and you know, the way they're reacting to this will help you and maybe friends and neighbors and relatives to make sure you're taking this seriously. I got a note from Sharon Coates from Zaretsky Associates. She sent me a note earlier this week, concerned about the number of, in this case, landscapers who were going out and not practicing the social distancing and the really taking this seriously. There are three people in a truck. That's going to be very hard to practice social distancing with three people in the front seat of a truck. So she had a couple points about this, and then also a letter. She was talking about the logistics of social distancing when businesses in general, but you know, landscape maintenance in particular is happening. And first of all, do we need to go out and rake leaves and things right now? Yeah, if you're a homeowner, that'd be probably a good idea. If you're not and you're hiring a business to do it, you know, whether they do it now or a couple weeks from now, probably doesn't matter at all. So there's the logistics of social distancing. Yeah, one person per truck. How are they, you know, using bathrooms, hand washing, when they're unloading things, when they're planting, how close are they to each other? In the offices, punching in and out, doing paperwork, how close are they? You know, how are they testing for people's temperatures? You know, are they worried about employees who are coming to work sick but are not admitting that because they need the work. Are the surfaces in the truck, in the business, on the tools, are those being cleaned? Probably not. Public safety, as those employees are out, gas stations, quick marts, public bathrooms, getting lunch, getting coffee, going to the hardware store, going to the nursery. And you have employees that maybe are asymptomatic. They're contagious, but they don't know they have coronavirus. They don't take the precautions that they would if they knew they had it, because there's an incubation period, and there are quite a few people are not symptomatic, or not very much. Well, that's just a cold. And you have these people, these employees, bringing it back to their families and things. There's a lot of issues for businesses in general, and the number that are essential are truly essential are probably far less than are deemed essential right now. And so, keep that in mind. If you're one of those businesses, consider shutting down, and we'll talk to a couple in the next hour, the next couple hours. So a couple of businesses, or at least one, shut down for a couple of weeks, retooled what they were doing, how they were doing it, and then reopen to do takeout food for their restaurant. But again, in that 2-week period, a lot happened. Now people are wearing face masks. So we know more about what to do, and we've learned more about this disease. So as you are hiring people to do things, keep that in mind. You can choose to wait. If you have a landscape company that's going to be doing maintenance, ask them to call you in 2 weeks. If you think they're going to be really struggling financially, send them a partial payment now, and say, here's a prepayment on having you do the work. We want you here. We just want you to wait 2 weeks. And it's early April. There's really no rush to get that maintenance done in general. So, again, the phone number here, 585-346-3000. We have a special guest on the line from the Artful Gardener, Gene Westcott. Good morning, Gene.
Good morning, Michael. How are you?
I'm very well. And the sunshine really helps, doesn't it?
It sure does. Yesterday was a little hard to take, not unexpected in April, but this morning's much more pleasant. So, yeah.
Yeah. So what's the update really in general of what the Artful Gardener, what are you doing right now in terms of business and ordering and things?
Well, I saw the writing on the wall early. So my shop has been shut down in terms of people coming and going for a month, really, since about March 14th. I shut it down and really, in the course of a week's time, changed my whole business model. I've always been somewhat contrary to doing anything in terms of online sales because I like meeting my customers face-to-face. But I realized that the only way that I was going to be able to maintain my relationships with customers and do it safely and responsibly was to shut it down. And so I started photographing my inventory and putting it up, and I can do curbside pickups and over the phone orders and, completely no contact whatsoever. And the only person that's been inside my shop for the past month is myself. And so, having seen this coming, I postponed putting in orders for many of the things that I would ordinarily be looking at coming in now. And, the orders that were already in place for which I was responsible, I said, okay, I'm not going to leave my suppliers out to dry. So I got those items in and photographed them and put them up on the website and sent my plan out to my customers via email saying, I was, it's my 10-year anniversary in May, and I was planning a big party for my customers.
Sure.
And instead, I'm wondering if there'll be a year 11. My customers are really fantastic people, and they responded, and I just need enough to eke by to get past the shutdown. And my hopes are that we'll recover.
Right. And a lot of the containers that you get in the spring are not easily shipped. People can get them mail order. I'm sure you can ship them, but they also can pick them up, as you said, curbside.
Yeah, well, the reason that I get one very large delivery of pottery a year is because the freight on these things is exorbitant. So to think about trying to ship individual pots is just out of the question. And that's part of the reason that it's, I don't do online. But for local folks that don't have the means to get one of these larger pots home, I'm willing, and I have the time, to do, completely no-contact drop-offs for some people. As long as it's local, within reason, I can't go all that far. And some of my items, frankly, are just, some of the pots are just too big even for my own vehicle. So that's just how it is. And I've got people, who are purchasing them, and I'm warehousing them until. And I'm happy to do that also. And I really appreciate folks that are willing to support my business in that way. It's kind of incredible to see, how people have come together. And I've just got so much to be grateful for. And so that's what I just keep concentrating on, is the gratitude for the ways in which the community is coming together. And there's just so much suffering out there right now, and I've got far less to complain about than some folks out there. So.
And people can get gift cards too.
Yeah, although. I'd frankly rather see people purchasing things that they want to purchase rather than, for me, a gift card is a liability sometime later on. It's essentially a loan that needs to be paid back. And
right.
So if there's something that somebody needs and they would like to purchase it, that's great. But in my situation, I'd rather not have a big pile of unearned income, as essentially.
Right.
If you're a bookkeeper, you'll know that that's in the liability column, not in the income column. So not to sound ungrateful for that, but...
But it's realistic, right.
Yeah.
You've got two dogs often there in the shop, and Lily, your first, was kind of an introvert, and
yeah.
Probably just as glad not to have lots of customers around, but you're... Your newest one,
yeah.
Like, it has to be going a little crazy.
Yeah, well, it's on a windy day, my back door tends to wiggle around a little bit, which makes a beep inside the door. So for Toby, that means somebody's coming in, and he goes running to the back door to greet people that aren't there, and it's a little bit heartbreaking. Lily could care less,
yeah.
Although her routine has changed, and so she's a little bit confused. About what day of the week it is, because the schedule is sort of up in the air. But it's their companionship is everything to me on a good day. So in this situation, You know, people who have pets, I think, know what I'm talking about. I mean, you don't need to distance yourself from your dogs, and they're there with you, and they're there for you, and everything is normal when you're walking your dog or working in the garden. They're, you know, they're a constant, and the best I can do for Toby, my social guy, is make sure I get him out chasing a ball as much as possible so that he gets a chance to get some of the energy out.
And these are from Joyful Rescues?
Yes.
You've helped to raise a lot of money for Joyful Rescues.
Yeah, we were lucky enough to squeeze in the Cabin Fever party just maybe a week and a half before this all happened, and raised enough money to fund a couple transports and add some money to their veterinary fund. And they've been going, doing amazing work through this shutdown. They came up with a way to do social distancing adoptions and have, you know, gotten homes for I think in a two-week time span, they adopted out something like 40 dogs, which is just amazing. So people right now have time to, you know, take in an animal and adapt them to the household. And so even though it's difficult to do this with social distancing, they're still managing to find these animals homes. Tremendously grateful for that organization. They do an amazing job.
Yeah, that's where we got our dog 9 years ago. We just got the Facebook reminder. It was 9 years ago that we adopted him from Joyful Rescues. So, again, check with them if you know someone who's thinking about getting a dog or... The dogs love this. I mean, really, our dog doesn't normally see this much of us.
I'm actually making sure that we separate from them once in a while so that they still remember how to be on their own.
That's a good point.
I don't want to end up with separation anxiety at the end of this for either one of us, the dogs or ourselves. So we try to leave home and leave them home for, you know, a couple hours here and there to make sure that they're able to handle it.
Good point.
Of the things I wanted to say, Michael, too, is sort of circling back around to the gift card idea, which is a lovely one, but a lot of the merchandise that I have in the shop, the sort of art, fine art and craft end of things. Those artists are relying on their galleries and ordinarily they also rely on the art shows like Art in the Garden or Clothesline or any of the various and sundry shows that go on throughout the year. And those are in the early part of the year here are all being canceled. And so the items that are sitting in galleries that are available for sale, if they get purchased, then the gallery owners can turn to those artists and buy more and so help support. So they're all independent. Many of them can't collect unemployment because they are not employees. And so they're in a really difficult situation. And so anything that I can do to help them, because their artwork has graced my store for 10 years now. And so if folks click through to the website and they see the fine art and craft collection, please know that you're helping support, you know, not me, but each one of those artists whose work is, you know, sitting in galleries all over the country, essentially unseen. So I've got, you know, folks at a woman just outside of Syracuse whose jewelry is in the store. I've got local potters here from Rochester. I've got an artist from Ithaca, a woman whose work, these beautiful tiles that sold out very quickly. She's down in Maryland, and I was able just now to put an order in. They're coming in next week for some more. And she was absolutely, you know, just beside herself, gleeful that somebody was able to order something from her right now, because she's just, you know, wondering how she's going to continue to support herself. I'll be fine. My husband and I will be fine. I'm grateful for everything that we have, most of all our health, but anything that that I can do to help support the many people, artists who have supported my shop over the last 10 years. That's what I'm trying to do. That's why I'm staying open. So.
And some of those shows like Lilac Festival come up, you know, that were, you know, about a month from now. And again, as you say, those artists won't be able to sell, and that's often one of the first shows of the season.
Yeah.
And not to mention Cornhill, Park Avenue, and lots of other smaller ones.
Right, so. And there's a big show whose name is escaping me at the moment that happens in Buffalo that is a longstanding and very important show. And then you've got the Chautauquas, and, you know, it remains to be seen at what point these things will be able to be back up and running.
Right.
So keeping these artists going through is what I want to try to help with. So.
Yeah, excellent reminder. And Gene, you're also a garden designer. Do you have anything blooming around your shop or that you've seen out while walking?
Oh, well, the February Daphne has been in bloom for about a month now, I think. That's just starting to fade. I have an amethyst witch hazel that's been in bloom for quite some time. The hellebores are just hitting their stride now. They're spectacular, and the daffodils are also up and blooming. There's also, being where I am in the historic district and next-door neighbors to the cemetery and some other very old properties, there's just, you know, carpets of the blue Scilla siberica in all directions, and the dogtooth violets are blooming, and the sweet smell of those greets me every time I get out of my car over there, because there's a whole lawn full of these violets, and it just smells glorious. And, you know, I'm sure that a lot of your listeners feel the same way. When I'm in the garden, everything feels, there's normal. I feel connected to the earth, and the birds are returning. The spring migration is going on. I heard my first oriole the other day, and so.
Oh wow!
And things feel like the weather has been on our side. We've had a very mild or amiable March, and so things feel like they're opening up a little bit sooner this year, and. And aren't we lucky for that?
So, yeah. I've got some blue jays building a nest in my front yard again.
Uh-huh. Where do they build it? In a tree or in a...
Yeah. Yeah, they built it in a coosa dogwood the last year, and I think they discovered maybe they just wanted a different location, but now they're building it in ironwood, which is going to be a much sturdier tree where they're building it than they... They had it kind of up in the top of the coosa dogwood last year, and it must have been gotten them a little seasick occasionally just with the blowing of the tree. But this year they chose the ironwood.
Uh-huh.
Or musclewood.
I have a couple of, several actually, sculptures around the gardens in the back, and the robins have chosen a tall blue abstract to nest in, and I say, good Lord, I can't sell that sculpture until nesting season is over now. And I have a wren that likes to nest in a giant copper frog. So, you know, it's sort of amusing to see these birds popping in and out of these sculptures. But
they've taken ownership.
Yeah.
Temporarily. Well, Gina, as you alluded to, you're next to the cemetery, Mount Hope Cemetery on Mount Hope.
Mm-hmm.
And the Artful Gardener NY.com.
Yes.
What's What's the best way for people to reach you? Call or email or Facebook?
So if they go on, really they can do all of the above. My hours during this shutdown, the hours that I am available by phone at the store are 11 to 4, Tuesday through Saturday. And folks can call and pay for things that they would like to purchase over the phone. They could also, if there's something on the website that they would like to see before making a decision, they can call me or message me or email and set up a time to come in and see those things. And I take them outside, whether they're pieces of garden pottery or jewelry or whatever. I have a table that I can lay the items out on, and they can come and get a closer look and make their decisions. And they can either leave their credit card on the table for me to pick up and take inside, or they can call me from the parking lot to make the purchase. It all feels very much like the Twilight Zone, but it seems to be working, and people are taking it in stride. And I think, it's to the best I can do at this point in time, but it seems to be working out okay.
Good. Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, and enjoy the sunny weather today. Thank you, Jean.
Thank you, Michael. Be well.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Jean Westcott from The Artful Gardener, again, Mount Hope Avenue next to the cemetery. And yesterday I was up in Highland Park. There are cherries beginning to bloom, including some right along Reservoir Road and very close to the conservatory. There's found some honeysuckle blooming, a viburnum blooming, the star magnolias, which are the white multi-petaled magnolias. Those are starting to open. The Oxford Street generally has the tulip magnolias, and those are not close to opening, but the star magnolias are. And as she said, those Scilla siberica are, and the Kyandoxa glory of the snow, which is lighter blue with a white center, those are all over in Highland Park. And many other things, actually, in bloom. It was a surprising number of things I found yesterday. And you can walk off the path to avoid contact with people. The path could get quite crowded at some point. That's not a good idea. They don't want them to shut down the parks. So I think you'll discover some new trees and plants and flowers if you are off the path and explore more of the park. We will take a quick break. Be back afterwards from our sponsors here on WYSL 1040. Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas here. This is The Grapevine, and that is Genesis with their Giant Hogweed song. We don't have to worry about giant hogweed yet, but that will be growing. We'll let you know as that time comes. But we have some great sponsors, without which I wouldn't be able to do this radio show, and the Birdhouse is one of those. And you heard Gene Westcott say that you heard a Baltimore Oreo a couple days ago. You can get a Baltimore Oreo feeder at the Birdhouse. They have curb service, and it's time to get those up. I've got one. I got to get out. So the Birdhouse has some great people to help you with curb service there, and also doing some cool things online. Through Facebook, you can find out about them doing their tea and tweets online. So you can learn more about birds and nature through the Birdhouse, even though they're not able to have the classes there that they usually do. So it's thebirdhouseny.com, Monroe Avenue, right near Clover. And Gallia's Tropical Greenhouse and Florist is right around the corner. They also have curb service and a lot of plants in for Easter. So check with them. Go to gallias.com, G-A-L-L-E-A-S. They can deliver mulch so you can get to work on your garden within a different radius of Gallias. And so gorgeous, gorgeous Easter plants right now. Gallias.com, and look them up on Facebook. Also brought to you by Sarah's Garden Center. They are doing curbside service there at Sarah's. Get some violas and pansies. Those are really the key things that can tolerate the cold. Many of the other things better to wait for. They have some gorgeous blueberries, and last year had a really cool selection of thornless raspberries and black raspberries. So if you're thinking about adding some fruit shrubs basically to your yard, Sarah's Garden Center has already some in, and more will be coming in. Probably better to wait a week at least to get those, but keep in mind they do have some cool ones that you could add to your yard. And again, the violas and pansies, they can generally take this cold weather. That's sarahsgardencenter.com. And also brought to you by Wisteria Flowers and Gifts. They're Culver Road right near University. You can look them up at wisteriaflowersandgifts.com to get more details about delivery and things. They have some gorgeous flowers that will brighten someone's day. Get them delivered, and they will add some colors. Not everyone has bulbs growing in their yard that they can go out and cut. Wisteria does some beautiful arrangements, bouquets and things. And so wisteriaflowersandgifts.com. The Arbor Barber, Steve and Emily Leidy, can help with pruning, thinning, removal of trees. Steve is back to working as a sole proprietor and had to lay off the rest of their employees, but can continue to work as a sole proprietor. And really, there's very little contact when he's 30 feet up in a tree with a chainsaw. You don't want to be around anyway. So get a free quote. That's the Arbor Barber, 289-4117. Get a little more light in your yard. Allow some of your plants to grow more. Sometimes the lilacs and the peonies and things were doing well 10 years ago, and other trees around them get bigger, and maybe some of those trees need to be taken down, or maybe you need to move the peonies, but they can give you a free estimate. It's the Arbor Barber, 289-4117. And follow Palmiter's Garden Nursery on Facebook. Marla Palmiter's posting some gorgeous photos these days of what's happening in their gardens. And again, some gorgeous display gardens there at Palmiter's Garden Nursery. So look them up on Facebook, and you can get updates on their hours and et cetera. And then Fruition Seeds. It's a great time of the year to put seeds in the ground. They have an awesome website, and also they have a garden club you can join, and it's like a pretty nominal fee basically per month to be part of their garden club, or you can just order seeds and do some planting over the next week or so. It's fruitionseeds.com, based in Naples, again, some fantastic seeds. And finally, Bricolo Tree and Lawn Care. They are still doing work, but being especially careful, again, with their employees as well as with their customers. You can call them if you want information about helping with your property, 424-4476. It's BricoloTreeAndLawn.com. When you call and visit our sponsors, tell them you heard about it here on Naturally Green.
Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row.
Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas here. It is Naturally Green. I'll be back in the next hour with For Love of Food. We'll talk to John Baker from Cheesy Eddie's. John Erlob from Roarbox in the next hour, and then discover the Finger Lakes to follow. Michael Warren Thomas here on WYSL 1040.